Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly the British ones. I'm Emma Clark, still reporting from End of Play at Lawless Convention in Bristol. I'm up in my hotel room and I am with Brian Walsh. Welcome back to the book club, Brian.
Thanks very much, Eamon. It's great to be here, and it's great to be here at Lawless in Bristol as well.
So you're Jesus Be Christ on the 2084.
So I called myself, and I'm not sure whether I should have, but there I am.
Fourth visit now.
Fourth visit.
Cradle Grave, Cinnabar.
Yeah.
Then there was Drunken Bakers. Mm-hmm. So you've chosen some interestingly sort of bleak stuff in a way.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, actually I was told last night how depressing I made the Drunken Baker sound, so I don't know if I did Barney Farmer and Lee Healy any favours with that one at all.
Well, we should say that when the Drunken Bakers episode came out, Lee Healy the artist did actually respond to one of our social media posts.
And that was great. And then you put him in touch with me, and we have corresponded a little bit since then. Anyway, he's a really nice guy and very interesting as well.
Fantastic. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the creators interacting with
us. Yeah, and we had John Smith got in touch to say thanks after the first one as well, which was great. Nice. So after Cradle Grave.
Nice. You're collecting all the creators.
Yeah. So it seems, yeah.
Well, we'll see how bleak this book turns out today. For your fourth visit, one away from the T-shirt, what have you chosen for the book club this time?
So this is what became known as the Journal of Luke Kirby, but the first story that I remember was called Summer Magic.
So somebody has finally responded to the call and chosen Summer Magic, the complete journal of Luke Kirby. You have got the paperback collection in front of you by Alan McKenzie, John Ridgway and Steve Parkhouse. There's colours in there by Ridgway himself, Tim Perkins, Gina Hart, Nick Ababsis and Steve Parkhouse. Letters Steve Parkhouse, Ellie DeVille and Annie Parkhouse. Original editors Richard Burton, Alan McKenzie and then John Tomlinson. We've got the first appearance in Prog 571 from 1988, and then stories obviously ran intermittently up to 972 in 1995. And just the final fact and figure, we've got the Rebellion trade from 2017 that collected, I think that's everything, isn't it? That's all of Luke Kirby.
As far as I know, that is everything. Yeah. All the specials and the one-offs and everything's collected in that. Yeah.
And we might mention later on, but it's since 1995 and Prog 972, we haven't seen Luke Kirby again, as far as I know.
I don't remember this, but somebody on the forum mentioned that in Gordon Rennie's story, I think it was Cabalistics.
Oh, right.
Somebody mentioned their friend Luke in the pub, who was an alchemist or something, went completely over my head, but apparently that happened. So there was a nod to him at least.
I'll have to look out for that, because I'll be rereading Cabalistics because it's coming up on the pod at some point. Okay, interesting story. Why did you pick this one, and what were your experiences, your first experiences reading it?
I suppose at the time, 2000 AD was, it was becoming a little bit more mature and gritty, and there was a lot of guns, robots, killings, violence, the usual. And I remember when this appeared in the Prog, it just really jumped out as being something completely different. Black and white story about countryside, almost idyllic little town, and a little middle class boy going to meet his uncle. And even the artwork looked different from most of what was in 2000 AD. I think around that time I was just beginning to recognise artists and their different styles. And I had seen John Ridgway before, like when he did The Raggedy Man for Dread and things like that, but I was too young really to register there was different artists and different styles, so this did feel completely new to me. And as I say, just very different from everything else.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, that perhaps leads me to ask, or at least perhaps to tell the story, because the way this strip was created And the fact, the way it ends up in 2000 AD is unusual, isn't it? Because it wasn't originally intended for 2000.
Well, I only heard this last night, but apparently so, yeah.
That Alan McKenzie sort of pitched it to, or in fact, I think he was writing it for the New Eagle.
Right, yeah, and that does make sense, actually, now you say it,
And I think he showed it to Richard Burton. Richard Burton says, oh, no, I'll have that for 2000 AD.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah,
and they looked for an artist. Alan McKenzie himself suggested John Ridgway. I did read in Thrill Power Overload, this has led to a little bit of a dispute as to who actually created the strip.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I think this was only relevant in the 90s when there was various film rights being sold off, or film and television rights being sold off. As we now know, nothing came of that.
No, like the supposed Strontium Dog television series would have been great.
Yeah. But nothing ever came of it. But of course, at the time, I should imagine, if you were a creator at the time, you were probably quite concerned as to which strips you owned, you know.
Yeah, I would imagine so, yeah. And probably quite excited about the money you might be soon making as well. So.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Sorry, but that never happened.
No.
Yes.
No.
Sorry, everybody. Never happened. There's never been a film or TV based on Luke Kirby. Well,
no.
Or
no.
Has there been? Has but, there. You know, yeah. All right, well, you mentioned a little bit about the plot. Let's just do the plot, or at least the setup of the very first story, Summer Magic. What, you know, tell us about Luke Kirby himself.
So Luke is, I think he's 8 or 9.
We're trying
possibly.
To work out if he was 8 or 9 starts, yeah.
He looks a little bit older the way he's drawn, but I think he's supposed to be about 8 or 9. He's, it's the 1960s. And he's getting a train to stay with his uncle because his parents are on holidays. His mother is on holidays. So he's going to stay with his uncle Elias.
Yeah.
Or when I was 13, I thought it was Elias, and I read it as that for a long time, but Elias is his name. And then he realises there's a bit of a secret that Elias has regarding Elias's own abilities and then Luke's destiny as well.
And Luke, I don't think we're giving anything away here. Luke is destined to become a powerful magic user.
Yeah.
Allegedly. We keep getting told that anyway.
Yeah, yeah, true. Yeah,
and actually, throughout these stories in this book, he does use magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Elias turns out to be, well, he sees him doing a couple of parlor tricks kind of for his friends, Elias's friends, but he's kind of hiding in plain sight. These are actually just a front for actual real alchemist magic.
Yes The magic in this system, or the system of magic in this world, is described as alchemy. Luke's going to be a powerful alchemist, and he learns mastery over sort of like, is it air, water, things like that.
I think so. The original, what was
elemental
as,
sort of
yeah,
magic,
what
yeah.
was originally seen as the elements, like earth, fire, wind, and water.
Yeah,
and yeah, I remember a little bit of an observation he made about traditional alchemy, which sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole on the internet the other night when I was preparing for this. And something that always stuck with me was, when Elias talks about, so the three things traditional alchemists were looking for was to transmute base metal into gold, to find eternal life, and then to find some kind of substance that can dissolve anything.
Mm.
Elias points out the immediate flaws. First of all, if you can make gold whenever you want, someone's going to ask where it's coming from.
Mm.
And I would imagine it's going to completely devalue gold as well. He says about the substance that would dissolve anything, what are you going to put it in?
What do you keep it in?
Yeah. And he says, who really wants to live forever, which is a fair point.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking, why did this never occur to alchemists back in the day? Yeah. Apparently it did. They did concern themselves with these things. That was my little rabbit hole adventure. And they did try to find some kind of way to keep this substance in a bottle as well. So,
You need some sort of resistant container for the universal acid. Solvent.
Which can't exist in nature anyway, magic or no.
So we've got a story about a boy wizard who's going to be learning his powers. He does, of course, learn the transmutation to gold trick, but it's more like sort of a parlor trick. Nobody seems to do it. Sort of like as a regular thing.
Well, they don't do it to make money anyway. Yeah. And he learns how to do that fairly quickly with his mind, because Elias shows him how to do that.
Yeah. So we got a boy wizard genre. Now, I don't think I'm giving too much away, because it's on the front cover of the collection, and that will be the front cover of the episode for this episode. But this first one is a werewolf story.
Mm, yeah.
And I know you were thinking about... we won't necessarily give away who the werewolf is, although I don't think it's too much of a surprise. But
no.
You were thinking about how this story fits into folk horror and the werewolf genre.
Yeah, so I was thinking, on the face of it, I suppose it is a werewolf story, but nobody ever mentions the word werewolf. And it's not really a traditional werewolf. It's not just a savage beast. Again, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but it's a kind of symbolic beast as well, like the beast in Lord of the Flies. Although it does, of course, have a physical form. It is an existing monster that kills sheep and kills people. But it's also a symbol of... Luke's destiny and Luke's future and the dark side of what's going to be in store for him.
Mm. And the other thing that I thought of, because you sent me, well, in fact, you thought of it, you sent me some notes, the Box of Delights.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've both listened to Jim Moon's Hypnagoria podcast.
Yeah, so lots of respect for Jim Moon, who's made me appreciate or rediscover lots of very interesting and fun things, usually in the kind of horror or ghost story or magic kind of side of things. So thanks for that, Jim Moon, if you're listening.
He's a book clubber.
I know.
He's also on 4 appearances, I think, as well.
Okay. I possibly discovered his podcast through your podcast as well, so...
Doing the work, good.
So, yeah, he kind of loves the Box of Delights and has done lots of stuff about it. So I rediscovered it. And, it's a very similar beginning, isn't it? Like,
well, I've noticed that there's this theme in classic children's literature, particularly of the 20th century, the sort of children being sent away into the country.
Yeah, yeah.
And then weird stuff happens.
Yes, Narnia is the same.
Narnia is exactly the same, yes.
I don't know the full story of Narnia, but when I was a kid, I had The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, which is exactly
exactly that. Kids sent away.
Yeah, yeah.
Into a strange house with a distant relative, possibly.
Yeah.
And then they discover something weird, or weird stuff starts happening. Yeah. It is a theme, and it's an interesting one in this one. And then, of course, Jim Moon also loves a bit of folk horror.
Yeah.
And this is quite... in places quite folk horror.
I think so, yeah. I mean, when Summer Magic came out, I don't think the term folk horror existed. But it does tick some of the boxes. It's rural. There's magical or ritual practices going on in the countryside. There's an outsider going in to see it.
Hmm.
Although he quickly realises he's very much a part of this this ritual magic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does tick a lot of the boxes of folk horror, all right.
And the later stories in the collection, there's very much like the old ways. In the old straight track, it is literally that. The old straight, folk or ley lines, which is, ley lines and passing significant sights, standing stones, circles, all that stuff.
Which I really enjoy in a story, even if a lot of it is just... kind of 19th century imaginings of what used to be rituals in old England or whatever, so.
I also noticed from your notes that you were interested in how Luke reacts to fear, this idea of fear. There's the darker stuff, he's got destiny and responsibility, but here's an interesting observation about the nature of fear.
So he finally Well, they go out to try and catch this beast, and he ends up on his own and confronted by the beast, which is a werewolf, or it looks like a wolf at this stage anyway. Yeah. And he manages to react quickly enough. He doesn't have the magical abilities yet to fight it, but yeah, he kind of observes in his journal, I suppose, as what we later find out is his journal, that fear is a friend and helps you to sharpen your reactions and react quicker.
Yeah.
And I think I also mentioned, I remembered a few years later when I read Orwell's 1984, there's the main character, Winston Smith, gets caught by the secret police and has the exact opposite revelation about fear, in that it stops you from reacting in any way.
Yeah.
Which actually is probably my experience more than Luke's experience. So, not that I've been caught by the secret police.
The secret police haven't got us yet. Not yet. So far. No. Yeah. If this podcast makes it out, we're going to talk about the artwork, particularly on the first story, in a moment. Mm-hmm. I'll mention, obviously, there are several stories. There's the Summer Magic, The Dark Path, Sympathy for the Devil has a prologue and the main story. There's a Trick or Treat story. The Old Straight Track is the sort of end. And then right at the end, there's a story called The Price, is Luke, again, doing a bit more magic to outwit some bullies. Because I know you wanted to focus particularly on the first story, but the other stories, he deals with a werewolf, he deals with a sort of vampire.
The
devil, a sort of demon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of just the archetypes, the horror archetypes.
With the werewolf and the vampire, they're not actually werewolves and vampires, as we find out. They're ostensibly a werewolf and a vampire. But in the second story, it looks like a vampire, and it looks exactly like Nosferatu in the original film. But it turns out to be a development of what that werewolf was in the first one.
Yeah.
Which is connected with magic and connected with practitioners of magic and this dark side, like Luke Skywalker. He has to fight the dark side at all times and fight the temptations of the dark side at all times. Another Luke, actually, isn't he?
Another Luke, I noted two things. Firstly, Alan McKenzie as a writer, and this is a period when he's also, somewhere in the middle of this period, he's editing 2000 AD at this point. And you don't know this yet, but on the other podcast I've recorded this weekend, one of the themes has been that when you're the editor of the magazine, if you write a script yourself, saves you on the budget.
You don't have to pay. Right, that makes sense.
You don't have to pay a writer for that.
And he did end up writing quite a bit, didn't he?
And the other thing I noticed, which is, I think it was slightly unfortunate for me, is that when you read the complete journal of Luke Kirby, which this is, and I know I'm being critical here, but Alan McKenzie, I think he does tend to write, it's a similar story construction most of the time. Luke's in the country. There's a big bad. He has a mentor figure. At some point in the story, that mentor figure will be incapacitated some way. And Luke has to go it alone and face the big bad.
Even the devil kind of steps in as a kind of mentor figure at
Actually, on the devil one, the sympathy for the devil, I don't know the answer to this, but are they sort of travelling in time as well as travelling through the country?
They're travelling into hell, as far as I remember.
Because hell seems to be a 1980s nightclub.
Yeah, it does.
That's what I thought. Is there a circle of hell that's a 1980s nightclub? It
seems to be,
I was in nightclubs in the 1980s.
Me too, I was the same, but... so that probably would have been the early 90s when that story came out, and it's got kind of banging techno nightclubs, which I don't think were a thing in the 60s. So maybe time is just irrelevant in hell.
Maybe, yes. Right. Just from my notes, again, I'll notice that not only are we fascinated with children being sent into the countryside, usually on a train, to discover something weird, but we're also fascinated, obviously, with stories about apprentice magic users.
Yes, yeah.
Long tradition in literature of these and comics. I've listed, you know, you said Narnia. I've got Susan Cooper's The Dark is Rising, Ursula Le Guin's Wizard of Earthsea. In comics, we've got the Books of Magic.
Yeah, which I haven't read, but I've heard of through comparisons with Luke Kirby.
Yeah, The Worst Witch. Of course, there's that young chap with the scar on his forehead.
Yeah. And that's always brought... that chap you mentioned, he's always brought up in relation to Luke Kirby. I have to admit, I'm not the man to ask about Harry Potter because I know next to nothing, except... like what you can't avoid hearing on lots and lots of media. But I've never read the books or I've never seen the films.
Right.
I saw Danny Dyer play him last weekend on Last One Laughing. Just
did you?
As a thug, as an East End thug. So,
we have in my family, we have a standing objection now to J.K. Rowling. So,
Well, I can understand that. All right,
people can understand that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about artwork, because that's probably safer ground for us. Possibly safer than talking about Harry Potter. possibly safer than talking about Alan McKenzie reusing story tropes.
Yeah.
The artwork. Yeah. Now, in this book, you've got black and white John Ridgway. Mm-hmm. Ridgway. You've got colour John Ridgway.
Yeah.
You've got colour Steve Parkhouse.
Yeah.
Any particular favourites that you picked out, not in terms of Grail pages, but just like the general style of the artwork?
Well, I think like the first one, Summer Magic, as I said at the time, it really stood out to me at the time as being so different from everything else. And I think it's absolutely perfect for the job.
Yeah.
It's very hard to imagine at the time picking whoever picked it, whether it was Alan McKenzie or the editor, picking a better artist to do this particular story. He was perfect. He does rural very well. He does frightened children very well, because he did The Dead Man a few years later.
So I was literally just checking the date.
Yeah.
The Dead Man is 89, 90.
Oh, is that long ago? Wow.
Yeah. So 1989, 90, and this starts in 1988.
Right, yeah.
So yes, John Ridgway's black and white Scary Woods.
Yeah. So yeah, obviously when they did The Dead Man, it's set in the Cursed Earth Woods with another mentor and a child, so he was the man for the job, clearly. Yeah,
it's interesting, because I wonder if he gets The Dead Man in a way because of this. I don't know.
I wonder, but of all the artists, like, there's some obviously amazing artists in 2000 AD, and the artists probably from the 80s that epitomizes 2000 AD would be somebody like Kevin O'Neill or Carlos Esquerra, obviously, but you couldn't get them to do this. It wouldn't have worked, you know.
It wouldn't have worked for Summer Magic. And of course, one of the misdirects of the Dead Man story is that you need an artist who's perhaps not associated with a certain...
True, so yeah.
You need a different artist.
Yeah.
But black and white John Ridgway is wonderful. It's very atmospheric. He really does dark and mysterious woods.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't he?
I was thinking the only artist I think who I was trying to go through my head, who else could do this properly? And the only other artist I think came after John Ridgway, who wouldn't have been available at the time. So one I was thinking might be Arthur Ransom. You know, I know he was working at the time, but he wasn't working for 2000 AD. The late John Burns have done a good job in colour, maybe, you know. So
I can certainly see Arthur Ransom. I can see that working really well.
Yeah,
because he does creepy as well.
Yeah.
May as well.
Maybe John Burns in colour, possibly. And one other I thought of was Simon Davis in his kind of watercolour or gouache or whatever he used.
Yes.
So his last work on Slania or Slane.
Yeah.
I've always said Slania because my dad told me.
Quite right.
But my dad told me, I remember my dad picking up the first ever prog with Slania / Slane in it, and my dad went to an Irish speaking school, so he said, oh, Slania, so that kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And then it was only later I realised everyone else called him Slane, so when I say Slania, I'm not trying to make a point or anything, it's just what I've always called him. So,
it is correct, yes.
Yeah. But, and I don't have a big problem with people saying Slane. I mean, Pat Mills calls him Slane, so. But anyway, the way he the way he did that story, and what was the folk horror thing?
Thistlebone.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Thistlebone, yeah. Simon Davis, and obviously written by Tom Eglinton, but that is dark and mysterious folk horror in the woods.
Yeah.
And Simon Davis, as we know, loves folk horror.
I didn't know that, but I would have guessed it from his work on that.
Well, I think he's certainly done a poster recreation of Blood on Satan's Claw.
Oh, right, okay,
He may have done some Wicker Man art as well, I think. Yeah, he loves all that. So.
Great, No, it doesn't surprise me at all. No. So, I think I mean, obviously, he was probably a child when this came out, or a teenager, but I think he would have done a good job on it anyway.
I'm going to say I prefer black and white Ridgeway to colour Ridgeway.
Yeah, and, I remember thinking that at the time, even when the second one came out, the sequel to Summer Magic, it's a good story and the artwork's excellent. But I think there was a policy then of having everything in colour in 2008. Yes. There was, and I think that was because of Toxic Comic, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah. As far as I know, they were worried when Toxic came out as a full colour comic, and realised it was possibly going to give them a bit of a run for their money. As it turned out, Toxic gave its creators a genuine run for their money, but that's another story.
You would you'd have to run after your money.
But so I think because of Toxic, mainly
there was competition.
Yeah,
you had to go colour then.
Yeah, colour was the in thing, and then it was post Bisley, so everybody wanted fully painted as
Bisley
well.
Arrives.
Yeah, yeah.
We know what happens. So yes, then you get coloured Luke Kirby stories. I miss the black and white John Ridgway of the original.
Me too. And I think it suffers a little bit, it has to be said, because of the colour. Nothing wrong with his colouring, he's very good at colouring. But Summer Magic, it's set in the 60s, it's in the past. It has a kind of storybook kind of feel to it. So black and white sketching, I think, was the way to do it.
Yeah. So, later on, of course, the art changes to Steve Parker.
Yeah. Now, I got this mixed up in my memory. I thought the old straight track came before Sympathy for the Devil.
Oh, maybe.
But just reading this, Sympathy for the Devil comes first.
Yes.
And then it's the old straight track.
Right.
Actually, my memory is failing me. I can't remember. Maybe
we should consult the book. Let's just have a look.
Well, in the book, it's definitely Sympathy for the Devil first.
Yeah. So, Sympathy for the Devil Part 1 starts in Prog 873.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise it actually said when they start.
And then the old straight track starts in 954.
Oh, fair enough.
It's
complete opposite from what I remember, but anyway.
Steve Parkhouse, I've talked about when I did the Beau Jeffries saga, is an artist who has the ability to draw funny.
Yeah.
Now, there are a couple of panels in here, particularly with his bulbous noses, where I think he can't quite help himself.
Yeah, that's true.
Being funny.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, he doesn't handles the scary stuff, the grim stuff, quite well, I think. You know, he does a good follow-up to John Ridgway. I like, there's a couple of panels, particularly a panel when they find Luke's father in hell, which is quite grim.
When he does when Steve Parkhouse takes over, it's, and again, because I know Steve Parkhouse has been drawing, or had been drawing for 2008 for a long time, but I was too young originally to distinguish artists and separate them by name and style and all that. So Big Dave was really sort
the controversial Big Dave.
Yeah, yeah. It was first when I put a name to Steve Parkhouse. I hadn't realised he was a long-standing, iconic kind of comedy artist, really, for 2008, or for comics in general. Like, so he does Sympathy for the Devil, and it's a little bit jarring, the change in artwork. And as you say, he kind of is more connected with comedy arts, like, as you say, the Bo Jeffrey saga, Big Dave.
Big Dave. But he does a pretty good job of taking over, I think.
Yeah, and I think in Sympathy for the Devil, it's, you know, the introduction, like kind of the prologue to it, is by John Ridgway again, and then it changes. And it's quite a change, all right. And I think it's coloured by Gina Hart, is it?
So Sympathy for the Devil is coloured by Nick Abbasis,
Nick
and Gina Hart.
And Gina Hart,
and then on the Old Straight Track, it's Parkhouse himself.
Yeah, so I think the Old Straight Track, that's when he's given free rein to colour himself, and that's when he really comes into his own. And I think then Luke Kirby, for the first time, starts looking really, really good in colour.
Yeah. Yes.
He really makes the English countryside look beautiful. And yeah, sometimes, as you say, the characters' expressions still have a little bit of a comedy look about them.
I think less so in that one. I think in the Old Straight Track, I think is when he gets it right, partly because he's colouring himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you say, beautiful British countryside.
Yeah,
They're moving through the through Britain, through various mystical sites,
meeting
various sort of strange sage characters along the way. I think I know you picked that one out, the Old Straight Track. That's probably the peak Steve Parkhouse.
I think so, and I think for me it's possibly the best Steve Parkhouse artwork I've ever seen.
Right.
It's I've never seen any other Steve Parkhouse art where he approaches it like that, with such detailed and picturesque watercolour backgrounds. I think it's watercolour, it could be gouache or acrylic, of course, but it's a watercolour style anyway, and then with pen and ink seemingly in the for the characters and the foreground
I'd love to see him at a con and ask him about it.
It would be very interesting to know.
It is beautiful on the Old Straight Track. I think that, as you say, is the best Steve Parkhouse art in this book. Okay,
it might be controversial to say it, but I think for this I possibly would even, for that particular story, I might prefer colour Steve Parkhouse to black and white John Ridgway.
Oh, okay.
I think
okay.
Who knows?
I think, as you do know, I would probably go slightly the other way. I'd go black and white Ridgway and then the Old Straight Track by Steve Parkhouse.
Yeah, yeah. That particular story, the Old Straight Track, if I had to choose between an artist to illustrate that one, it might actually be the one they did choose,
Yeah. Right, we're going to get to Grail Pages.
Mm-hmm.
Summer Magic, the first one, is... is that the best story in the collection, or do you prefer the Old Straight Track?
No, I think Summer Magic is the best story.
That is,
I think, the perfect Luke Kirby story.
And then the Old Straight Track, I think, is a very good competitor for it.
Yeah, yeah.
We were trying to work out Luke's age when he starts in 1962.
Yeah.
And he's 8 or 9, and then in the Old Straight Track, we know he's turning 10, because your 10th birthday is apparently an alchemical significance.
So they're saying.
So by the end of this collection, Luke is 10. There's all sorts of hints about his future.
Yeah.
There is, I took from it a slight hint that maybe his uncle and his now dead father may have had some almost like Luke was going to be the sacrificial lamb that saved the world or something.
It seemed like, I remember reading it in your notes, and then I just reread a couple of the stories, and I don't think a sacrifice as in they were going to kill him.
No.
They were going to sacrifice his freedom and just to live a normal life.
Yeah.
He had to become this master alchemist, and all the responsibilities and attempts to fight the lure of the dark side of alchemy that entailed. So that's what I got from the sacrifice.
I think you're probably right. They're setting him on a very difficult road in order the old straight track in order to fight off the darkness that's coming.
And there's they're also kind of telling him to protect his cousin Kim, and Kim's a strange one because she's a bit of a cipher of a character. No, she is his cousin, but Luke seems to have a bit of a thing for her, so possibly less said about that the better. Yeah. But she doesn't really crop up again in the old straight track, or I don't think she arrives. She appears in Sympathy for the Devil either.
She pops up again in the Price story at the end.
When they're
being bullied, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And there's a horrible moment earlier on in the book where
I'd forgotten about that until today. Actually,
where Luke seems to know what her future entails.
Yeah.
And then he lies to her. So everything is going to be fine.
Quite grim, really. Yeah. You know? And given that he has kind of a crush on her as well, it doesn't seem to have affected him that much. But maybe he has accepted just his life is going to be full of dark and horrible things as well, you know.
Yeah.
And the sacrifice, I suppose.
He keeps losing family members, let's say that.
And then about his destiny, there's one thing about the old straight track, it kind of made me laugh a little bit. Every time he asks somebody what's going on when he meets all these magical sages on the way, it's always like, well, why are you asking me? You're the Kirby. But he still doesn't know the answer. So if I was Luke, I'd get a little bit pissed off with that after a while. I think it would grow tired after a while.
Yeah.
Well, you're the Kirby. Why are you asking me?
You tell us, yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the fucking answer, do I?
Well, I guess what we've learned from books and film and television is that when you do meet these mystical sages, they never tell you what you need to know.
No.
They'll say something very oblique.
That
you may figure out later on. You think, well, I could have, you know, you could have just told me.
Yeah. I suppose mediums and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They'll never just say your money's hidden in an envelope.
Yeah, tell me where it is.
Yeah.
So, but the big question, of course, is when does it finish? 1995 is the last time we had Luke Kirby.
Right,
And that was just that little after story called Price. Yeah. Alan McKenzie, so the plans Alan McKenzie had for Luke Kirby never came to anything. Mm-hmm. There's an oblique reference I've now learned from you to him, possibly in Kabbalistics.
Yeah, and I don't actually remember that in Kabbalistics. No. I just saw it on the forum, I think so, yeah.
So we never find out Luke's destiny.
Yeah.
Here we are sitting in a hotel room in Bristol 30 plus years later. And no more Luke Kirby. This is it.
No. And I don't really know what happened to Alan McKenzie.
No.
He just seemed to have disappeared into the wilderness now. One of many Alans who write for 2080, isn't he?
Yes, one of the famous Alans.
I think Alan, if you're a writer, and Simon, if you're an artist, and you have a foot in the door already. So.
Yeah, or the panel we were both in downstairs. Three Johns.
Three Johns.
Okay, so this is the complete Luke Kirby.
Mm.
It has been published by Rebellion in paperback. It's still available, certainly digitally, from the 2080 store. And you can probably pick up the paperback secondhand, like I did. We're going to play Grail Pages.
Mm.
Variety to consider. Like I say, Black and White Ridgeway, Ridgeway with Colours, and then Steve Parkhouse. Choose a couple of pages. What are you going to have?
Can I have a couple of pages?
Absolutely.
Great, yes. Thanks. Yeah, that's kind of taking a bit of guilt off my shoulders anyway, so... So the first one I was going to choose, and I felt I was committing heresy by not choosing a Ridgeway page, but it's the first two pages, like a two-page spread. Can't remember if it was two...
We'll give you the first two.
I'm just going to assume it was two pages as a spread. Of the old straight track, part two. It's nothing...
Have I marked the correct ones?
So nothing happens on it, really. It's just the start of Zeke and Luke's journey through the British countryside. And it's just amazing. It's just a really nice landscape or a series of landscape pictures. I'm not like grail pages, I suppose, would be things I would put on my wall. And I'm not really the type who would put comic pages, like, much as I love Dredd and Slane, etc. They're not really things I put on my wall. This I probably would put on my wall because it's just a beautiful rural landscape kind of series of pictures. So that was the one.
So Steve Parkhouse, two pages from the start of the second episode of the Old Straight Track. Luke and Zeke moving through the British countryside.
Yeah, and they're moving through what appears to be a field of rapeseed, which is growing around me plentifully at the moment. I think it looks amazing. And I think it's that time of year. It's around this time of year when this is happening, which is May Day, because we do see a May Day celebration at some stage.
I believe I'm right in saying that this is Steve Parkhouse colouring himself.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just the reproduction here, but absolutely nailing it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, getting the colours right. Not garish.
Yeah.
Beautiful British countryside look to it. Figures moving through the landscape. It's just wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, and it still has that kind of the original one set in the 60s, so this is as well. So it's still, even though it's in colour, it still looks old-fashioned and...
slightly muted, slightly... Yeah, I mean, it's not sepia, but it's sort of
it's
feeling...
It's getting there, so it does have that nostalgia kind of tone about it as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it's excellent now, really good.
Really fabulous stuff. So...
So, given that you gave me another option as well, the other one I was looking at, I'm just looking for it now, it's the one where, from Summer Magic, where Elias conjures a fire wolf from a ring of standing stones with the full moon in the background.
Right.
And it's amazing. It's just a beautiful wintery... nighttime shot, anyway.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Let me just have a look at that one. That's the... Oh, yes. Yeah. Right. That is amazing. So I will post these images, hopefully, on the gallery and the socials when this comes
out.
And
I do appreciate you giving me the extra one and lifting the burden of guilt off my shoulders for not choosing a Ridgeway one originally. So,
in the back of the book, we've got one Luke Kirby cover.
Yeah.
John Ridgeway, 2008 Prog 804. Not a particularly memorable cover.
No, I wasn't mad about it, to be honest.
His cover for the collection is much better.
It's better, yeah.
So you've got two Steve Parkhouse pages, one John Ridgeway black and white page. I'll just say very quickly, the first page, literally the first page of Summer Magic, John Ridgeway, black and white, train into the countryside.
Oh, yeah, that is excellent, isn't it? Yeah.
Arriving at the station. Summer Magic logo, got the credit box. For some reason, as we've said, kids being sent on trains to distant relatives is a thing.
Yeah, and that is a classic opening of 20th century literature, you know.
Amazing stuff.
I might borrow your grail page for a few months every year. That's okay.
Well, if we ever get them, we'll move them around.
Well,
they'll be on loan.
Yeah.
Excellent. So that is Summer Magic. We finally got to the complete Luke Kirby. Sadly, there was no more. We never found out what his destiny really was. Yeah.
And actually, if you think about it now, he would look like, if he was around now in 2026, he'd look like a wizard is supposed to be. He'd be old and grey-haired.
So, I mean, if he was... he'd be in his 70s then, if he was aged in real time.
Yeah.
Or if we went from 1995, so he'd be 30 years older, he'd be 40, but he'd be in the early 2000s.
Okay, yeah. He would have a mobile phone. Yeah. And he'd know about the internet.
So. He'd know about the internet, yes. Thank you very much, Brian. Thanks for picking it.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much, as always, Eamon.
No trouble at all. BrianWalshPictures.com is where we can find you.
Yeah.
What's happening there at the moment?
Well, I've just set up a new website. There isn't a whole lot on it, but you should get a few different samples of the different types of stuff I do. My main thing is mural painting, but I also paint windows as well, generally for special occasions like Christmas and St. Patrick's Day. I do a little bit of sign painting, so there's a section for that as well. And then I do just general kind of illustration, which can't really be categorised. There's a Dredd and Hammerstein sketch there as well.
Oh, nice.
And I gave it away as a print on a plate once as part of the 2008 Forum Advent calendar. It had some kind of competition. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Right.
But I printed that image on a plate and sent it to two people. That's going back a long time now.
Right. Right. Oh, great. And you're on Instagram, aren't you?
Yeah, so Brian Walsh Pictures.
Pictures on Instagram. Yeah. Links in the show notes, both to the website and the Instagram.
Yeah, I suppose I should mention I did another Advent calendar entry I did, which I think was 2023 on the Forum Advent calendar, was a Luke Kirby tribute.
Oh, nice.
It was a rush job, as they always are. I was happy. I did a kind of imagined section from a poem about Luke Kirby in a Christmas adventure, and it's only kind of a snippet of two lines. I usually do them with Biro when I'm doing the illustration sketches for the advent calendar, but I left it to the last minute like I always did, and all my biros ran out. So I used a brush and ink, and it was kind of the first time I did, so it's not brilliant, but I was kind of happier with the text and the idea than the actual illustration I did. And it was also my 2000th post on the forum as well. So,
oh, okay. So your 2000 post was Luke Kirby.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, links, as I say, in the show notes to your website and your Instagram. As you say, on the forum, you're quite active as Jesus B. Christ.
Yeah.
People can find you there.
For better or for worse.
Well, for better, you've been meeting some other forum people in real life.
It's been amazing.
To last night and today.
Yeah. Because, as you know, like really the first proper forum I went to was Enniskillen last year with you.
Last convention, yeah.
And I was kind of a bit lost. I didn't really know what to do at forums, so you were incredibly helpful in introducing me and showing me around, and I met lots of people that way, lots of creators, including John Wagner, who I met for the first time, and he signed a Bogeyman book for me, which I gave to my brother, and he just finished last week and was impressed.
Nice.
My brother Kieran, and I believe you were brother
I've got
Kieran.
A brother Kieran.
Yeah, I know.
I pass on comics to.
Really, yeah. So it's because of my brother Kieran that I read 2008. It was his thing, really, and I read them as a hand-me-down, really.
I read them as a hand-me-up from Kieran.
Yeah, So, and then, meeting Conrad was a treat. I was looking forward to that because I've listened to so many of his podcasts and he really cracks me up. I think I did an impression of him doing an impression of a Cockney boy.
Well, everybody does that.
He could probably do a Luke Kirby impression, couldn't he?
He probably could, yes.
Meeting Barrington Boots, as he is on the forum, Colin
YNWA.
It was amazing
He's a lovely bloke.
So that was brilliant. And then Richard, who does the Boys Adventure comics, didn't realise it was him I was talking to today.
He's gone home now, but Richard's been here.
Yeah,
he came on the road trip with us.
That sounded like an adventure, alright.
It was an adventure. It was an adventure.
So there's probably people I met who are on the forum and I still haven't realised who they are. you know, so apologies to them.
Yeah, well, I think Luke might be. Luke and Charlotte, who did the walk with us yesterday.
Yeah, morning. Well, Luke is Barrington Boots.
Oh, is he?
Yeah,
there you go. Right.
And is Charlotte on the forum as well?
I know. She's certainly on the Facebook group, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And Luke sent me... So I had one of the 2000 AD yearbooks, which my brother Kieran gave to me when I was about maybe 15 or 16 for Christmas, and I had it for years. But as you know, I used to live in a houseboat which burned down, and that went with it. But a couple of years ago, Luke sent me a replacement, which was really nice of him, having never met me. And
oh,
I got
nice.
It. I got it signed by John Wagner at Enniskillen last year as well. So
fantastic!
Yeah.
So you've had a good day here at Lawless today.
And one thing I should mention, I would have liked to meet Jim Campbell, who probably would be here if he hadn't been going through the horrors right now. So just a shout out to Jim. We're all thinking of you, Jim, and we're all rooting for you.
Long road of rehab for Jim. I hope it's going well. And I hope Lawless next year he's here.
I've known him, his online self, for 25 years or something, and I've never met him. So we're all wishing you well, obviously, Jim.
Yeah. So we've had a great time. We've seen some amazing art. We've met some great creators. We've met some great fans. Mm-hmm. And we're about to probably go back to the bar and then go out for fish and chips. Can't be bad.
Looking forward to that.
Brian, thank you so much for doing
it. Thanks so much, and it's a pleasure to see you again as well, and I really appreciate the opportunity you give me to do this.
No trouble, you've got to do one more to get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what the book is. One more for a t-shirt.
Rack my brains for that one. Yeah.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Megacity Book Club. As ever, we're on the website megacitybookclub.com. You'll find links to Brian's work, you'll find Grail pages we've been discussing on all the socials. You'll find me by email at mcbcpodcast@gmail.com if you want to come on the podcast and do a book, a story, a creator, any bit of British comics books history. And that'll do us. Mm-hmm. So for the final time from this year in Bristol at Lawless 2026, it's goodbye from me. And
I'll quote Pete Wells in saying goodbye from the other me.